All right, good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Resources Committee to order. The time is 3:34 p.m., February 2nd, 2022. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum. Present today are Senators Stevens, Kawasaki, Keel, and myself, Senator Rivak. Please silence your cell phones. Staffing the committee today are Resources Committee aide Inti Maya Harbison, LIO moderator Kelsey Riker, and Juliana Singh from Records. Thank you as always for your service to this committee. We appreciate you at this time. For those on Teams, I'd like to remind you to please keep your computer muted and your screen off until we ask you to speak, so that way we can cut down on background noise and make sure we have the bandwidth for everybody. Today's agenda consists of one item, SB 148, an act relating to mandatory boating safety education relating to operating a boat and providing for an effective date. This is the first time the committee will be hearing this bill. It is my intent to hear the bill and take public testimony and set it aside for members to consider questions and potential amendments and the direction the committee desires to take the bill. With that, we're going to jump right into it. SB 148 here to present the bill is the bill sponsor, Senator Holland, and his staff, Mr. Ed King. Also available, he has with him Joe McCullough, Boating Safety Program Manager, Department of Natural Resources, available on Teams. Rick Geese, Director of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, Department of Natural Resources, also on Teams. And then Michael Folkert, Boating Safety Specialist, U.S. Coast Guard, here in person as well. Thank you for being here today to present this bill. Senator Holland, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and whoever you have with you, and walk us through this bill. I'd also like to acknowledge we've been joined for the record by Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Senator Roger Holland, Alaska State Senate District N, and here to present Senate Bill 148, Boating Safety Education. Just a brief aside about, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Vice Chair. Thank you, committee members. Just a little bit of background information on myself. I'm 30 years in the Coast Guard Reserves. I retired out in February of last year. I'm 10 years with the Coast Guard Auxiliary up here in Alaska. I've taught innumerable amount of people how to drive boats and taught many, many boating safety classes. And this is all just about trying to decrease the number of fatalities in Alaska. That's what this is all about. With your permission, I'll read the sponsor statement. According to the U.S. Coast Guard Office of Auxiliary and Boating Safety Data, Alaska holds the unfortunate title of having some of the highest recreational boating fatality rates in the United States. At 7.7 times the national average, Alaska suffers 50 fatalities per 100,000 registered boats. On a per capita basis, Alaska's fatality rate of 33 deaths per million people is over 14 times the national average. Senate Bill 148 aims to reduce those figures through boating safety education. The boating safety data for 2020 shows that 60% of all accidents were a result of improper operation, 90% of accidents involve a boat of greater than 10 horsepower, and 77% of deaths in which the operator's training was known involved an operator with no boating safety education. Alaska's Department of Natural Resources currently offers a boating safety education program funded through boating registration receipts. However, unlike many of the lower 48 states, Alaska's program is completely voluntary. Senate Bill 148 would begin a slow transition toward requiring boating safety education as a requirement for operating a boat. The bill exempts those with a commercial fishing license and Coast Guard merchant mariner credentials to prevent overwhelming the boater safety education program with tens of thousands of participants all at once. The bill proposes that all Alaskans under the age of 18 on the effective date must take the course before operating a boat of at least 10 horsepower. I've drafted this legislation with the goal of creating the smallest burden on our residents and minimal cost to our government. I believe that this bill would save lives as better training reduces the number of boating accidents we experience. Please join me in supporting this effort. Mr. Chairman, can I go through the sectional analysis real quick?
Please, Senator Holland, do.
Senate Bill 148, an act relating to mandatory boating safety education. Section 1 amends AS05.25.053B relating to the statewide boating safety education program by removing the program duties, which are inserted into a new subsection D in Section 2 of the bill. Section 2 creates new subsections, AS05.25.053D and E, which lay out the responsibilities of the Department of Natural Resources in implementing the statewide boating safety education program. Section 3 establishes a new section, AS05.25.054, which directs DNR to issue boating safety education cards to persons that pass the course and to require anyone age 16 and older have acceptable proof that they are trained to operate a boat. Section 4 establishes a fine of $50 for a violation of carrying acceptable proof that they are trained to operate a boat. Section 5 authorizes the Division of Motor Vehicles to create an indicator of boating safety training to be placed on driver's licenses. Section 6 authorizes the DMV to create an indicator of boating safety training to be placed on state identification cards. Section 7 repeals the reverting sections of the original enacting legislation for the boating safety program and later amends to it that were tied to conditional repealing language in HB 108. Section 8 repeals the repealer section of the original enacting legislation for the boating safety program and later amends to it that was tied to conditional repealing language in HB 108, and Section 9 is the effective date clause. That's the end of the sectional analysis, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Holland. Did you have a presentation that you wanted? Were you going to run through this presentation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Before you, Senate Bill 148, Boating Safety Requirement. And a lot of this information I just presented in the sponsor statement. This first graph is boating fatalities per 100,000 registered boats. And if you look, Alaska is not proudly at the top of this graph. We have, this is per 100,000 registered boats. And we have almost 2.5 times the next one in line, Colorado. This is 2020 data. This is only 2020 data. Slide 3 is the percent of deaths by known operator instruction. And as was mentioned previously, you can look over 75% of the deaths are known to involve individuals with no boater safety education. The green pie slice is informal internet other boat US offers a online boater safety class. The blue 11% is state boating safety instruction, and the yellow sliver is Coast Guard Auxiliary, US Power Squadron, and American Red Cross. Slide 4, this is an incorrect slide. We grabbed the slide at the time and found out that Minnesota and Indiana, two landlocked states, have also instituted mandatory boating safety education. So now it's down to 4 landlocked states in the U.S. do not have mandatory boater safety education. And the one state with probably half, depends on how you count coastline in the United States, Alaska has a third or half of all the coastline in the U.S. And Alaska does not have mandatory boater safety education. So you had mentioned Joe McCullough. And if Joe McCullough is available, I'll let him introduce himself. He's going to discuss slide number 5, if
okay,
you care to call on him.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Holland. Mr. McCullough, if you are online and can hear us, please put yourself on the record and walk us through your slide.
Muted?
If you're speaking, Mr. McCullough, you may be muted.
Okay, can you hear me? Did that work?
We can hear you.
No?
Yes, yes.
Yes, we can.
I can hear you, Joe.
They could.
Brief at ease.
what's up.
All right, we're back on the record. Mr. McCullough, can you hear us? Mr. McCullough?
Yes.
Okay, great. If you can hear us, please put yourself on the record, and I think we're at your slide in the presentation.
All right. Joe McCullough, voting law administrator for the state of Alaska. How's that now?
Good. We can hear you.
Okay, that's better. I really apologize for that. I'm trying to do two different ones, watching you on the internet, and then we're on Teams. Joe McCullough, voting law administrator for the state of Alaska Office of Boating Safety within the Department of Natural Resources. And as you can see on the slide, we started this program in 2000. It's been voluntary since then, and we've received or delivered almost 13,000 NASWA course completion cards to date already, with it being voluntary. A lot of those are internet courses that we have approved, the state has approved for offering, and then several thousand are classes that we've taught in person, which seems to be an Alaskan preference. And we are managed, like I said, within DNR, and most of our funding comes from a federal grant. And then we do receive funding through boat registration receipts. And to go into that, I mean, there's been questions about how would this be funded, and I can tell you that as long as those registration receipts keep coming in, this program should be able to continue to do what it's already done and can accomplish the mandatory education without a huge extra lift. And I'll answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I have one more slide.
Okay, just a second. I don't see any questions, so we'll continue on. Okay, perfect. Please, Senator Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 148, the bill highlights a few points on what the bill attempts to accomplish. One, it requires boaters to complete a training course before operating a boat that has a motor of over 10 horsepower. There are exemptions for anyone over 18 on the effective date. There are an exemption for commercial fishing license holders and Coast Guard merchant mariner credential holders, an exemption for anyone who's passed any of the department approved boating safety course. Senate Bill 148 creates a boating safety insignia for a driver's license or state ID. And it removes contingent repeal tied to federal funding. We can get into explanations of that if you have a question about why we removed the repeal. The sunset date on that repeal was previously 2012. And then finally, I'll just say there's three people in the picture on the screen, and one of them's already sitting here at the table. I'm the guy on the right. If at this time I could invite Mike Folkerts, he's the guy on the left. He's a recreational boating safety specialist with the U.S. Coast Guard here in Alaska, and we're prepared to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Folkerts. If you do you have comments? If you do, please put yourself on the record.
Okay, for the record, Mike Folkerts. I'm a boating safety specialist for the 17th Coast Guard District.
Thank you, sir. Do we have questions? Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Holland, it's a great bill. It makes a lot of sense. I'm surprised we haven't done it before. But, and this may be totally off, that you don't even want to hear this, but why don't we require swimming as a requirement to get a license or to get a permit as well? I mean, When I first got to Kodiak in 1970, I was surprised to learn that so many kids, always on the water, just could not swim and never learned to swim. Now where we've got pools around, is that something that you would consider adding, or is that just too far off to what your goals are here?
Thank you, Senator Stevens, through the chair. It's an interesting thought. I would just worry you try to keep this as simple as possible. Another big problem in Alaska, like in the picture right here, we were off the coast of Savoonga, and we were actually giving residents of Savoonga the opportunity to put on various types of life-saving gear. We'd put them in the little folder boat, and we'd tip it over and dump them in the water. There were residents of Savoonga who said in over 40 years, they'd never gone in the water because water was usually death. So here in Alaska, even having people knowing how to swim, Alaska's pretty unique in that the cold weather environment we have up here. I would worry about making that a requirement because you don't want to give people, having the bold thought they can go overboard and swim. Hypothermia usually sets in a half hour or so in some of the water temperatures we have here. And I don't believe any other state has swimming as a requirement for boating safety instruction.
Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate the answer, and I'm not going to stand in the way of this. But it is something that we need to work on in Alaska to make sure that kids know how to swim and are on the water. Does the Coast Guard have a requirement that you know how to swim?
I will let Mr. Folkert speak to it because we do have the Kids Don't Float program in Alaska. It's an Alaska program. And so, Mr. Folkert, you care to speak on that a little bit?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, we do not have a swimming requirement in any of the boating safety education programs around the country. Certainly swimming gives a boater a measure of confidence, I think, that allows them to survive a situation where if they had an unplanned cold water immersion event that they might panic otherwise if they didn't know how to swim. So certainly swimming is a benefit to all boaters. A little bit outside the scope of this program, perhaps, but I highly support swimming efforts across the state.
I understand. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I have a question. Well, Senator Keel had his hand raised. Okay, well, I'll just real quickly, who would enforce this? This would be all law enforcement agencies, including the Coast Guard, that would enforce policy, I suppose.
I'll defer to. Would that be for Joe McCullough? Or?
Mr. Chairman, the enforcement process be as a state law, it would be enforced by state law enforcement officers, state troopers, park rangers, the folks with the authority and jurisdictional capacity to do that. The Coast Guard supports state law and would certainly assist in enforcing state law. Typically, it's not that level of state law. For example, a boating education card, if you got boarded by a Coast Guard officer, for example, he might ask to see that. Then refer it back to the state for any kind of prosecution.
Okay, I appreciate that. One of my concerns was, I knew we had a lot of Coast Guard involvement, which is great. Appreciate what the Coast Guard does, but the interior folks is sort of how I know that it looked like this was going to be a mark on the driver's license. And I know we have some pretty rural communities. Many folks may not have driver's licenses or an instance that comes to mind is Mr. Sturgeon on the America River by the Federal Park Service folks way out in interior. And so I guess the question is have you kind of thought a little bit about how this might be handled in the interior, some of the differences with folks who may not have licenses and things.
Senator Roger Holland, Mr. Chairman, just to ask you, talking about maybe having difficulty in acquiring the training or the certification in the first place, just not having the access.
Well, correct. Yeah, the unique situations that folks in rural Alaska might find themselves, whether it be not having a driver's license or access to internet, even in many cases where the troopers come to and fro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably defer to Joe McCullough for that question, if he's available.
I am. First, through the chair, in response to the law enforcement question, primary law enforcement is through the Department of Public Safety. And I have spoken with them, and this would be a soft enforcement at the beginning and let this phase in. As far as reaching rural community, there's a lot of ways. And also I want to add the driver's license is an option. They can always just carry the card, which would be issued. As far as reaching them, there's a variety of ways that our program's already doing it. And first and foremost, we'll see what the demand is, but we always go where there's a reasonable request. And we travel around. We've done the Kids Don't Float program and reached over almost 6,000 schools that way. So we're very familiar with doing school programs. And that's how I see this actually taking place. And so the rural communities, most of them do have internet. If they don't, we can train instructors and or do the training ourselves. It's not going to happen overnight, but we do have the infrastructure to do it.
Thank you, Mr. McCullough. That does help. I actually have utilized the services at MWR on JBear, and for those watching, that's a morale, health, and welfare program that actually rents boats to service members to use, and you have to take a safety program before they'll rent you the boats, and I found it to be very valuable. Certainly the idea of boater safety is fantastic. Just a concern of who has access and how it's enforced is. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my thanks to the sponsor for bringing the bill forward. I am a great fan of safety education programs. I volunteer in a different one. Two lines of questioning, and I guess the first would be when I look at slide two with that voting fatality rate, I guess it's slide four with the education requirement, I'm not sure I see the strongest correlation between states with safety requirements and low death rates and no safety requirements and high death rates, but I guess that there are a lot of question marks in variety in how a state might set things up. Do you have, is there research, are there studies that show that these boating safety education programs, Mr. Chairman, that's a lot of words, do they work?
Through the chair, Senator Roger Hollins, State District N. It was brought to me that this is a snapshot in time, and there is a lot of fluctuation in Alaska from year to year, and whether it's I will let Mike Folker, because he's the one who was just talking to me, one of the reasons this year I believe represents COVID fatalities in Alaska. And one thing COVID did was it pushed people out of the cabins with cabin fever in search of something else to do. And that might be why. But I'll invite Mike to place himself on the record and provide some input on that.
Yes, please, sir.
Mike Folkers, U.S. Coast Guard, through the chair. Senator Keel, thanks, Senator Holland. Senator Keel, the graph you see in front of you that Alaska looks really badly is exactly as Senator Holland said, a snapshot in time. We typically look at long-term trends to develop programs, preventative programs, interventions, that kind of thing. So this isn't necessarily indicative of what goes on in Alaska over 10 years, 5 years, 10 years, that type of thing. But it does give you an indication of where Alaska stands compared to the rest of the lower 48 states. Alaska was the last state or territory to have a boating safety law. That happened just 20 years ago. One of the most powerful programs ever developed in the entire country is Kids Don't Float. That started right here in Alaska. That has saved over 38 lives in Alaska that are documented. and using the Department of Transportation's value of a statistical life at $9.4 million, that's a substantial savings to the state. So we know that education improves people's ability to make correct decisions on the water. Being a federal employee, I'm sensitive to how Alaskans feel about the feds in general. Not to make a joke about it, but I've been Alaskan for a long time, and I'm no more fan of federal overreach than anybody in this room. So the federal government doesn't want to tell the states how to run their programs. In fact, Title 46 U.S. Code Sections 13101 and 102 state that the states have the authority to lead the boating safety program. So the Coast Guard is actually a partner to the state of Alaska in this case. So as we take statistics, we look at them, and we develop programs, we support the state of Alaska in all the programs that they're doing. It's very difficult to say that education is going to save your life or your life or your life. But when you're in a situation where you have to make a decision, if you have education, guaranteed you're going to make a better decision than if you didn't. So anecdotally, education does save lives.
Mr. Chairman, if I can see my Senate staff is chomping at the bit to come in and maybe provide some insight on this last question.
I would actually like to hear from Mr. Geese, if Mr. Geese is online and available. Do you have anything to add?
For the record, my name is Ricky Geese. I'm the director of Alaska State Parks, and thank you for the opportunity to provide a comment. I would say in response to the last question, John Johnson from the NASBLA is available, which is the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators, and he has statistics, if you would like to hear, of the effectiveness of other states' mandatory boating programs.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, just 1 second. I'd like to hear from the bill sponsor before we get into that. We'll get to you in just a second. Go ahead, Senator Holland.
Well, Mr. Chair, I tell you, I don't want to step back too much, but honestly, I believe Mr. Johnson would probably be the expert. He was invited testimony. He'd be the expert to speak to Senator Keel's comments about statistics and do we know whether boating safety instruction actually saves lives.
Perfect. Well, Mr. Johnson, if you had testimony, why don't you take a shot at answering the question, and if you have testimony, just go ahead and give us that now.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here to speak on behalf of SB 148. My name is John Johnson. For the record, I'm the CEO of NASBLA, the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators. And I could just for a moment tell you a few of the things that we do to support the states. We develop national boating education standards. We develop national marine law enforcement training standards that have trained more than 20,000 officers over the course of the last 12 years. We develop model acts and best practices, and ultimately develop national RBS policy and program development actions to help move the states forward. I want to share with you a few of the resources that we have available. I have not brought them this afternoon, but I'll make them available if you need them. We have a policy position on mandatory education. We have a model act on mandatory education. We have a dashboard that really illustrates data around state education requirements by state. And then lastly, I'll share with you, to get to the question that the Senator Keel has asked, we have a study on the effectiveness of mandatory education programs. And if you'll indulge me for a moment, I'll share you some statistics both from 2007 when the study was initially done, as well as some highlights from a review we've done in the course of the last week. First of all, we divide mandatory education based on the time of implementation in the states. So in that study in 2007, we looked at states that had mandatory education in place for 20 years or longer, states that had education in place for 10 to 19 years, finally 1 to 9 years, and then states that don't have a mandate. In the first group, states with over 20 years, the average at that time was 3.89 fatalities per year. For states that had mandatory education in place for 10 to 19 years, that number rises to 5.52 fatalities per year. And then for those with 1 to 9 years, it rounds out about 6.5 fatalities per year. For those states that did not have a mandate at the time this study was done back in 2007, that number was about 12.28 fatalities per year, so more than twice as much as the others. Obviously, that study is a little bit dated, and I asked my staff to prepare some numbers based on data from 2015 to 2019, accounting for new states that have come on board with mandatory education in the intervening years. So because of that intervening period, now we're looking at implementation timeframes for states that have had mandatory education for 35 years or more, states that have it for 25 to 34 years, under 25 years, and then states with no mandate. In that first group, for states that have had a program in place for more than 35 years, the average annual fatality rate is 3.7 deaths per year. For those with 25 to 34 years under their belt or in implementation, that number is 6.79 fatalities per year. And then finally, for those under 25, it's 6.95 fatalities per year. And those states that don't have a mandate, on average, and there's five states that are in that group, have 14.28 fatalities per year. For us, the big takeaway is the gap between the fatalities among states with mandatory education and those without. It's just grown wider during this last 15-year period. Average fatalities among those without education requirements has grown from 12.28 deaths per year in 2007 to 14.28 deaths per year in 2019, while states with education requirements have stayed about the same. Overall, a voter is more than twice as likely to die from a voting incident in states without education requirements. And when compared to states that have had mandatory education in place for a long time, over 35 years, voters in states without education requirements are more than 3.5 times more likely to die in a voting accident. I'll be glad to provide all the data and those reports I referenced earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Do we have any questions? Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, thanks. I'd love to see the reports. That'd be great.
Yeah, if you could send those to our office, we'll distribute them to members of the committee. Senator Kawasaki has a question.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question, I guess, for the sponsor of the bill. So if a person were to rent a boat or a skiff, would that person also be required to have a card or get a card before they were able to rent it, basically?
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. Senator Roger Holland, District N. I actually rented an MWR boat or two when I first hit town. We moved to Alaska in 2009, and it was a matter of taking my phone out and logging onto the Boat U.S. program. And it was a requirement to rent the boat at the time and do a nationally recognized boating safety instruction program. And Boat U.S. has one of the free ones, and so they're pretty popular. I don't know, does that answer your question? To operate a boat in a rental boat in Alaska, I believe this would require boating safety instruction.
Senator Kawasaki?
I'll let him read that, but I do have another question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question is, I did have another question. I can't remember. We talked about it being something that wouldn't be enforced heavily at the beginning. I was just wondering if the sponsor would consider maybe a delayed effective date or something to that effect, because it looks like it will be, you know, officially the law of the land after January of next year. So just a comment.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. That has been noted. Senator Machicki?
If I may have a moment, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
People smarter than me have put papers in my hand. And and the statement in here is a person may not operate a boat with an engine of 10 horsepower or more, according to the bill, unless the person is at least 16 years of age, rents the boat, and completes a required dockside safety checklist before operating the boat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Holland.
Senator Machicki. Yeah, thank you for whoever can answer this best. It looks to me from the fiscal note that this is a no-cost program other than for the change to the identification card. Is that correct?
Senator Machicki, Vice Chair, through the Chair, yes, that's correct. It's a zero fiscal note except for $14,000 for developing DMV to develop the box on a driver's license.
Okay, so there are organizations obviously existing that will give free instruction to the public, or do they pay for a private provider for the course?
Vice Chair Machicki, through the chair, there are organizations that provide free instruction, Boat US. And when I took Boat US, I printed out a certificate that you fold up, stick in your wallet. I will let Mr. McCullough speak to that as the Alaska representative for this. Mr. McCullough, did you hear the question?
Yes. Joe McCullough, through the chair, there are the free courses, Boat US. There's also paid courses on the internet. The state of Alaska, our program, we don't charge for Alaska WaterWise, which is our nationally approved course. And other providers, such as the Coast Guard Auxiliary, Power Squadrons, they charge a very small fee, basically, for books and materials. But that is up to the provider. There are free and paid courses. So you're correct in that it wouldn't cost, the fiscal note is zero because we already have in place what we need to do the program. And for others to teach it, that's entirely up to them and to the person taking the class, what kind of course they want. They'll have a lot of choices. Thanks.
Through the chair.
One moment. Senator Machicki, did you have?
I can wait if there's a follow-up.
And a follow-up on that, Senator Machicki through the chair, Senator Roger Holland District then. So the Coast Guard Auxiliary, we charge $75 for the class. That's a 10-week class, one night a week, 3 hours a night. Covers so many topics. We do one night just on pretty much on hypothermia and cold water immersion. But we do navigation. We do it's a pretty broad thing, and that $75 mostly just covers the book. But there are also national instruction organizations that have these programs, these educational modules that they have for every state. And they, from what I understand, they are theoretically standing on the sidelines waiting for Alaska to request this training to be prepared, and they will prepare something that's curtailed to Alaska law and provide, and it will, once again, it'll be something for a fee online, but I can't imagine it's going to be more. At $75, the auxiliary is a little expensive for that when you look at what's available on the internet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just looking at the measurement per 100,000 registered votes, do we have an estimate how many Alaskans would fall outside of the currently trained or exempted?
Vice Chair Machicki, through the chair, I don't have that number. We can try to get it before the next meeting. I don't know if any of us would have that number at this time.
Potentially, would Mr. Geese, would you happen to have that information?
For the record, my name is Ricky Geese, through the chair. At this point, I do not have that information, but we can work towards with the sponsor to get that information for the committee.
Okay, thank you. Senator Stevens.
Oh, thanks. And maybe just clarify the issue of the existing program is an eight-hour class, and Senator Holland, you were talking about a 10-week class. Is there a requirement in here of a certain number of hours in this bill? Or what is the?
Senator Stevens, through the chair.
Yeah.
So these are a variety of different classes and different types of classes. The Coast Guard Auxiliary has four-hour classes, has eight-hour classes. The eight-hour class mentioned here today is the State of Alaska class. If I will invite Mr. McCullough to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that is the take a look on here real quick. It's an eight-hour class, is the State of Alaska class. And basically, it is a NASBLA-accepted instruction on boating safety. And the Coast Guard Auxiliary class is 10 weeks and 3 hours a night, one night for 10 weeks. It's over and above the requirements for NASBLA. It is more for people who haven't bought a boat yet. There's portions of the class that discuss powering your boat and different engine options and hull types and everything. So it's a pretty broad, expansive class, and it's not the boating safety education class that's described by the state of Alaska. It's more for people who really just want to get into boating and they come to the auxiliary. And we give them a book that's that thick, and we spend 10 weeks covering the book.
I understand that, and it sounds like there's a real advantage to the longer class. But in this bill, would this 8-hour state requirement, that would satisfy the requirement? That would be enough.
Thank you.
And maybe could you, I'm sorry, Chairman, one other issue. Would you clarify the legal requirements? What are we talking about in an 8-hour class, including legal requirements? What's covered in that?
I would go to Mr. Senator Stevens through the chair. I would probably fall back on Mr. McCullough for that answer.
Mr. McCullough?
Senator Stevens through the chair. Legal requirements covers AS5, which are and the federal requirements. And in a nutshell, they're life jackets, sound signals, having registration. And then for specific boats and boating environments or, between sunset and sunrise, that gets into navigation lights and visual distress signals. But in a nutshell, it's the carriage requirements. What do you have to have on your boat in case you get stopped by a peace officer and they check to make sure you have all the equipment that is required? So that's what legal requirements are. We also touch on alcohol and other laws, negligent operation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question, I apologize if it's been covered. Is there reciprocity in these boating programs? I can't imagine Kansas and Oklahoma spend a lot of time on the kind of currents you get around Kodiak or Upper Cook Inlet.
Senator Keel through the chair. Once again, I would probably, lowly Mike Folkerts might have an answer on that.
Go ahead, sir.
Mike Folkerts, U.S. Coast Guard through the chair. Senator Keel, that's a bit of a tricky question, of course. Some states certainly, the states that share borders on the Colorado River, for example, may or may not reciprocate with another state's education requirement. The standard in the boating world, in the recreational boating world, is the NASBLA requirement. So if you meet the minimum NASBLA requirement, chances are very good that you'll be able to boat in other states, again, depending on that particular state's requirements.
To follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
But it sounds like it may vary from state to state, which I guess makes a certain amount of sense given what Mr. McCullough told us about the Title V requirements. Is it good? How often do you need to renew or your education under the bill, or do you?
Senator Keel through the chair. First, take a step back on the bill, page 4, line 2. A person is it reciprocity? This has to do with the fact that the education class is approved by the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators. Section 7 says, let me read it properly. Person may not operate a boat with an engine of 10 horsepower or more unless the person is a resident of another state and is carrying on the boat a boating safety education card approved by the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators, NASBLA. So it's basically, that is a national program. And I know someone who took training here in the States, because I forget which state they were going to. They were heading over to the Netherlands, I believe, and renting a boat. And they were going to live in that boat for 6 weeks. And they took a boating class here in Alaska. I can't say it wasn't not in Alaska, but in the United States. And they went over and took it. So I apologize. I also have an answer for your question through the chair. If you'd repeat the question, I forgot it.
Mr. Chairman, do you need continuing education, refresher, renewal, or is one card good the rest of your life?
Senator Keel through the chair. Appreciate that. Thanks so much. I know this is a one-time class. just like it exempts Coast Guard merchant mariners. I believe they assume once you get the experience, once you've accrued the experience, it's yours to keep. But at this time, there's no renewal requirement.
Thank you, Senator Holland. Other questions? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I noticed that you exempted commercial fishing license holders and registered guides. It sounds like through the Coast Guard certification. So I think almost every guide is requires a six-pack kind of thing or larger, depending on the type of vessel. But this, I'm curious about the removed contingent repeal tied to federal funding. Are we, have we foregone some category of federal funding because we do not have a safe voter mandate?
Vice Chair Machicki, through the chair, if I could ask Mike Folkert's step aside, I believe my staff, Ed King, he's explained that, but he's so good explaining at it. I'd rather not try to repeat it.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Folkert. Mr. King, if you put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff, Senator Holland. Senator Machicki, through the record, or, I'm sorry, through the chair. The conditional repealer was in the original language in 2000, the House Bill 108. It had two repealer conditions. One was a sunset date, and one was if the federal funds ever stopped flowing to the state, the program would be automatically repealed. The sunset date was later reversed in subsequent legislation, but that conditional effect on if federal funds stop, then the program is automatically repealed, that still exists in current law. So what we're proposing is that that conditional effect be removed from the original legislation.
And this is self-funding.
And Mr. Chairman, just to elaborate on that just a little bit more, the funding, the federal funding has continued through 2022 or through since 2000. We were able as a state to fund the program through federal funds originally. That has continued and will continue even after this bill has passed. Mr. McCullough can expand on that if you like. But we're not losing any federal funds. We're not missing any federal funds. We're not suggesting that we change any funding sources. We're just simply saying that if the federal government were to stop funding this program, the program should continue, and then the state could decide on its own through the appropriation process whether it should be funded.
Thank you for that, Mr. King. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more, and since I misread the bill the last time, the odds are pretty good. We'll get an easy correction this time, but we'll try it. It looks, as I read this bill, as though there is no way for anybody under the age of 12 to run a motorboat on their own. It looks, if I understand it right, like you can't get the class, or if you take the class, you still can't run a boat, a little 20-horse outboard on it. I certainly did that. And so I'm curious, can you drill down a little bit into why that limitation?
Senator Keel, through the chair, and we had a recent discussion on this is, one, this does not affect anything that has to do that's non-motorized, and then it doesn't affect anything less than 10 horsepower. And that was presented to me as they target that 9.9 horsepower because there isn't really a 10 horsepower motor. It's like everything's 9.9 or lower. The next one up, I believe, is 15 horsepower. I wouldn't say I would necessarily. I knew my 12-year-olds. I don't know if I'd want them to be running a boat at 12 years old, but there's a lot more people with more experience on the water than maybe my girls were when they were 12 years old. But that is to cover them if they get on a dinghy that's got 9.9 kicker on it. They would be entitled to operate that boat because it would not be affected by this legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I spent a lot of time on little boats on flat water around the state. Up in the south central part of the state. And a little Zodiac with a 20-horse, really crummy 20-horse Merc on it. but I could zip around on it. It occurs to me that if I'd done that without a life jacket on, I wouldn't have survived my parents afterwards. But there weren't – the operation of the boat itself was relatively safe. So I have to think about that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, the question is it too late to prosecute Senator Keel?
I think the Constitution has a thing about ex post.
As the statute of limitations passed. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I believe my staff has maybe a partial response to.
Well, sure, if you'd like to address that, Mr. King.
Thank you for the record, Ed King, again. And Mr. Chairman, just for all of the members' benefit, the bill was largely drafted based on model legislation from the NASGWA, and if there are conditions that don't fit Alaska as well as they do the rest of the states, we could definitely discuss those differences, but Mr. Johnson might be able to discuss why that 12-year-old limitation was in the model legislation.
Sure. Just very quickly before we get there, for the record, we have been joined by Senator Bishop for some time now. Thank you. Mr. Johnson, please put yourself on the record.
For the record, John Johnson with NASGWA. That 12 years was determined by a group of voting safety professionals a long time ago that just seemed to be reasonable age for one might expect them to be able to understand the rules associated with an education course and be able to operate that boat safely.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Other questions? All right. We are you complete with your yes, Mr. King?
Mr. Chairman, just there are two issues in the bill after drafting that I can take responsibility for that are prone for amendment if that's of interest. One is the in two places in the bill there's the words Coast Guard commercial operator's license. Those were words that escaped the review of the Coast Guard personnel. We were later told that the Coast Guard merchant mariner credential is the correct term, if there's a friendly amendment there. And then we were also brought to our attention that the previously mentioned language on page 3, line 28, relating to boat rentals and dockside safety checklists, this is information that might not exist in current law or regulation, and authority for the department to develop that checklist might be appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. King, and we certainly will work with your office before we hear this bill again to work on some of those issues. Senator Machicki?
Well, that does bring up a question. So if you're talking about merchant marine level, you're not talking about registered guides as being exempt. Folks that may have worked on the water for decades. Is that correct?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, we can work on that language. It was flagged for me as perhaps using the wrong terminology, and we can discuss what that right terminology should be.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Now we are going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony on SB 148 is now open. Do we have folks online to testify? I do not. Yes, we do. Mr. Groves from Kotzebue, please put yourself on the record and give us 2 minutes or less.
Yes, sir. Joe Groves, resident of Kotzebue in Northwest Alaska. Been in education here for 21 years. I'm also a licensed merchant mariner. I've worked with the school district and students with boating safety and worked with people at the state level. I just wanted to give some public testimony that I really feel boating safety education is important, especially in our region. We're all connected by water, and boats are used. I think it has affected kids. I think the education portion of the boating safety has definitely saved some lives. And any support from legislation or laws put into place to promote that is great.
Thank you, Mr. Groves. Appreciate your testimony. I don't see anyone else online. Do we have anybody in the room who would like to testify? Public testimony. Yes, please, ma'am, come forward. And put yourself on the record. That's your name and organization. And
I didn't know who was coming out.
Welcome.
I'm going to give them some space.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kelly Toth. I'm here testifying on my own personal time right now. A few things that I'd like to share with you is that I was the former education coordinator for the Office of Boating Safety for over 8 years. I've traveled extensively throughout Alaska as a boating safety educator. I also serve on the National Standards Panel for the National Association of Boating Law Administrators, and that's a handful of people through the nation that established these standards that we're speaking about today. And I will say that the standards are built nationally on a consensus-based approach. So it goes out, it's a very extensive process. So that is issued through the American National Standards Institute. I do have a subject matter expert. I wasn't able to get my hands on the study, but by Dr. Michael Tipton from England, who has a study on how mandatory education and how education training does in fact save lives, and he does have that, so I will try to get that for you. In addition, the public health approach includes three main prongs, engineering, education, and enforcement, and when you have all three of those pillars working together, then you know that you have a good injury prevention program that can make a difference, and this legislation would really do that in the realm of education. Finally, I'd like to share with you an anecdotal story. When I was serving for the Office of Boating Safety, there were two men and a son, so a father, a son, and an uncle that were in a canoe. They were moose hunting, and they got a moose, and they overloaded their boat. The two men were not wearing a life jacket. The son was, because by law he was supposed to, and he knew he should, and knew how to wear it properly. Well, because the boat was overloaded with this moose, it capsized. And that son knew exactly what to do. He knew the what cold water immersion does to your body. He could articulate it and understood the value of providing a life jacket for both his dad and his uncle. So anecdotally, we know that training and education does save lives. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Appreciate that.
And Ms. Chairman, oh, yes. And the result, what happened? Did they all survive? Did they?
And Kelly Toth, please.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, Kelly Toth again for the record. Yes, they all did survive. I'm not sure if they recovered the moose meat, but I hope that they did. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Toth. Any other folks in the room who would like to testify on SB 148? Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. And just want to thank all the folks who are willing to be here and dedicate your time to this issue and to testify. Our committee support staff, I say it all the time because it takes a lot of work to make a committee function. We appreciate all of you and to the bill sponsor. Thank you for being here and working on this legislation.
Mr. Chair, do I have a few moments for some closing comments?
Sure.
Thank you for your accommodation. One of the real rewarding parts with the auxiliary is to be able to have some people who are interested in boating in Alaska and look them in the eye and tell them, you know, if you go overboard without a life jacket, you are probably not going to die of hypothermia. You're probably going to die of drowning when you can no longer tread water. And the whole idea behind bringing these people in, getting the opportunity to tell them that, you know, just that little difference right there. I do believe that being the leader in recreational boating safety deaths is not what we want to be here in Alaska. And I do believe it's a hard lift. It'll be a hard sell. But I do believe this is important. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Senator Holland. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, so you've talked about a national standard, and I'll tell you a little story. I was raised in Fort Lauderdale. My first power boat was when I was 8 years old, in a boat that had to be bailed very often. Many years of experience, I moved up here and bought a boat. And a couple years after I bought it, we were duck hunting in a remote bay in Ketchumack Bay, and boat got hung up on a mooring buoy, a self-retrieving mooring buoy, just after a storm. We waited a day and a half for folks to come along. I had to go to work. I played water polo. I swam in high school, swam for it. And I don't know how I get out of the water, but I will tell you that I don't see how is there a standard when you have so many different risks around the country? I mean, there's rapid, fast-moving water training. There's dynamic bodies of water like we have in Alaska. Some is warm water. Some is hypothermia, includes hypothermia risk. Do these national standards cover all of those things? Just somewhat? I had no idea after many, many years of experience on the water. So it's interesting how there could be a national standard. How does that work?
Who would you like to take that question? Is it? Do you want to take that?
Senator? With respect to the chair, pick one. No, Senator Chickie, through the chair. You know, it is not a one shoe fits all. But as I mentioned before, there are companies waiting to provide the national training they offer for the 30-something or 40-something other states that have this already to adapt it to Alaska. And I can't speak to the national standards. I don't know if anyone we had speaking today is interested. Probably John Johnson with if he's still on board with NASPLA. Sure. And I'll stop talking at this point and see if he wants to talk.
Sure, Mr. Johnson, go ahead and put yourself on the record.
For the record, John Johnson with NASPLA. Yes, the national standards really are about the lowest common denominator. Everything that all the states have in common really forms the basis of the standards, leaving plenty of room for state-specific activities, special hazards that the Senator described earlier. So, yeah, it really tries to look at all the things that most states would encounter on a regular basis and use that as the basis for the standard, and allow states to go beyond that and customize, obviously, their own legislation beyond that.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Other questions? Well, I will bring my own life jacket if I ever fish with my colleague from the Kenai. Sounds like. Back to thank yous.
Well, another confessional, Mr. Chairman. We might not have any members left here if
we all back and
try them all for what they've done.
All right. Well, thank you very much to members of the committee for your attention. Again, the presenters and all the support staff and everybody being willing to be here to testify. Great testimony. We appreciate it. Our next regularly scheduled meeting will be this coming Friday. I'm sorry, we will not have a meeting this Friday. Brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. The upcoming meeting will be posted on BASIS, and we'll let the committee members know as well in advance as possible. Thank you again. This meeting is adjourned at 4:38 p.m.